The following live presentation by Rabbi David Aaron is brought to you by Israelite, inspiring a renaissance in Jewish living. To learn more about Israelite, please visit our website at www.israelite.org. Additional contact information is available at the end of this presentation. Thank you for learning with Israelite and enjoy the experience.
We are going to do Parshas Nitzavim V'yelech, and then that will leave us with only two more, and we will finish the entire Chumash. So Nitzavim V'yelech go together generally, and they're both very short, so I think we can do them. I think they're pretty straightforward. There are certain issues in them that are really important to know about, and so that's what we're going to do today, but I'll just give you the rundown in terms of its overview. So Nitzavim is, remember, we've been talking about how Devarim is 37 days before Moshe is passing away and handing the leadership over to Yoshua. Well, Nitzavim is now the last day of Moshe's life. Okay, this parsha, the next parshiot, were all done in one day. Okay, everything that's happening in these parshiot is basically in the day, the last day of Moshe Rabbeinu's life. And the first thing is, he starts off, Atem nitzavim hayom kulchem lifnei Hashem Elokechem. You are all standing erect and straight before God, your God, your heads, your tribes, your elder, your policemen, all people of Israel, the children, the wives, the women, the converts, everybody from the wood carver to the water drawer, everybody is standing before Hashem today to pass you through a covenant, okay? So we have a new covenant that's going to happen just prior to the entrance of the Jewish people into the land of Israel. There is an establishment of a covenant. And one of the understandings is because the covenant that Hashem made with the Jewish people at Sinai was in the desert. But now that the Jewish people are about to enter into a land where they do not have such an obvious sense of dependency upon Hashem, so Hashem decided that to reestablish the covenant here before they go in. Okay? Then, right after that, Moshe tells them, unless the person think in their hearts as an individual, oh, I don't have to do any of this stuff. No, you are responsible to this, and there is punishment. And what will happen is, ultimately, if you do not listen, I will cast you into exile. And that brings us then to chapter 30. And in the exile, you would do tshuva. And the question we'll have to deal with is paragraph chapter 30 a promise, or is chapter 30 a commandment? But whatever, we'll deal with it in a second. In chapter 30, we have a whole long process of tshuva and redemption, and the Jewish people will come back, and God will circumcise our hearts, and we'll talk about that in a second, okay? And then, Moshe continues on chapter 30, verse 11, this mitzvah is very close to you, it's not in the heavens that you'll have to say who will go up and get it, it's not across the ocean, you have to say who is going to go over and get it, but rather it's in your mouth and in your heart to do it, okay? And then Nitzavim ends off with, so behold, I place before you life and goodness, death and evilness, and choose life. I have commanded you to love Hashem. And it ends off with the ultimate of what Judaism is all about, and you shall love God and listen to His voice and cleave to God. And this will be the lengthening of your days, just as God has promised Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob to give to them. Okay, now I'm going to do V'yelech in a nutshell. Now, after Moses tells them about this new Brit, and they accept this new covenant, or the reestablishment of the covenant, at Nitzavim, it then says Moshe goes and to tell them that he is passing. Okay, I am 120 years old, and I can't go on anymore. The wellsprings of wisdom is being hidden from me. I am not in the position to be your leader anymore. I'm going to establish... He comforts them, and he encourages them to go on and be strong, and remember, without Torah learning, without the mitzvahs, you won't be able to survive in the land of Israel. And Moses then appoints Yoshua, and he gives him words of encouragement. Then Moshe Rabbeinu writes a Sefer Torah. The oral tradition says that he actually wrote 13 Sifrei Torah, 13 Torah scrolls. He gave one Torah scroll to each tribe, and the 13th was given to the Levites to guard and placed it in the ark. Okay? And this, of course, being the one of the final things that Moshe would do, which was to make sure of the ability to protect the Jewish people from anyone doctoring up the original text or any forging that would go on in the Torah, God forbid. And therefore, they always had a Torah that they could rely on as an original text. So everybody, all the tribes had their own, and then there was the one that was in the ark that was guarded by the Levites, and that would be the final original text that could always be cross-checked through that. Okay. And then so the oral tradition says it was a miracle and he did it all in one day, which is of course impossible for a human being to do. It takes at least generally about a year to write a Sefer Torah. Okay? But that's what the oral tradition says. Then it says, then he brings the mitzvah of the National Assembly, Hakel, which we talked about briefly, which is once every 7 years. It's actually the first year of the Shemitah during Sukkot. When the Jews are already gathered into Jerusalem, they would have this ceremony called the Hakel ceremony, where the entire nation would gather together, children, women, everybody would be there. And the king would read portions of Devarim. Okay? And this, of course, is part of the goodbye, the farewell of Moshe, that he wants to establish the authenticity of Judaism as its tradition should be maintained throughout the history of the Jewish people. And therefore, he's written the Sefer Torah and has given them all out. He's written that text, which will be the final authoritative text. He then institutes the mitzvah of Hakel, which will make sure that every 7 years the Jewish people will get together and hear words of encouragement about Torah and keeping Torah by the king. Part of what he read was Shema. And then Moshe Rabbeinu gives the mitzvah that actually every Jew should try and write themselves their own Sefer Torah. Okay, and if you can't write a Sefer Torah, then buy a Sefer Torah. And the various halachic questions about that in terms of today, and do you fulfill that by buying books? Okay, but that's what's happening over here in the Tzavim Ve'Yelech. So now let's go back to the philosophical dimension of what this is all about. Now remember, we want to keep in mind that we are coming to the end. Not the end, there really is no end to Ein Sof. But we are coming to the end of the five books of Moses, and we would like to see, in terms of where does it bring us in the theme of Tikkun. Way back in the Garden of Eden, where the first man and woman had sinned and had undermined what was supposed to be within a matter of hours, Olam Haba, we now entered into a whole new stage of history as we march towards the new Olam Haba consciousness. Now, Nitzavim, I think, is really very appropriate because we left off Adam HaRishon. And remember, the first man is really universal man. He's not just an individual, he is the collective root of all humankind. And all of humankind is playing out the tikkun, the fixing towards that ultimate, right, where we can then reach that stage of Olam Haba, awareness and consciousness. So what do we leave him off with? We left him off hiding from God, right? Unable to stand before God, right? And then, of course, exiled out of the Garden of Eden. And there was that process of either people completely denying God, or people completely rebelling against God, or people completely being subservient God, nullifying themselves to God. Judaism and the ultimate fixing is the possibility to stand before God in a state or within the context of a relationship, a brit. That's the ultimate expression of Hashem's oneness. That's the ultimate of Olam Haba. Now, this is what this is all about. Nitzavim means that you are all standing before God. And that's what it says. Nitzavim atem, you are all standing before Hashem Elokeichem. Right? All of you are standing before God, your God. And that took a long time. Because it was one thing, as we learned way back in the times of Avram, that before Avram received the covenant, whenever he would have a God experience or encounter, he would fall on his face. He was not able to stand before God. Right? The human being felt completely overawed by the presence of God. Okay? And therefore, either you denied God and opt for your sense of self, or you denied self and opt for a complete nullification to God. Brit is the beyond the either-or of those two options. Okay? And that started with Avram Avinu, continued with his son Yitzchak, continued Yaakov. But now this ability of Brit, of standing before God, is now given to an entire nation. Right? Everybody. The old, the young, the men, the women, the children, everybody within this collective nation called Am Yisrael can stand before Hashem. Now this is a major movement forward in the story of Tikkun, that not only did we move from a human being who had to run from God and could not stand before God's presence, and find this unique individual called Abraham who could then begin that process of standing before Hashem and entering into a relationship of love with God. But now you have an entire nation, right? Everybody of this nation are standing before God. So therefore we can see how this is such a climax to the Torah, right? And we also spoke about the idea how, in fact, Nitzavim has a certain quality of a godlike quality. The Sfat Emes says that you are standing before God similar to angels, right? That's one of the things that are said about angels. Human beings walk, but angels stand. Right? Kulam omdim biyira v'omrim kadosh kadosh kadosh. There's something about angels that stand. And therefore the Sfat Emes says that you have reached the level of nitzavim, where now you are standing like heavenly host. Itself so much part of what Judaism is all about and the whole story is all about. Because the whole story was to be like God. And the question is, how does one reach a status of godliness? The snake has his way, and the Torah has their way. Pharaoh had his way, but the Torah has its way. What is the ultimate way to be godlike? It's through entering into a relationship with God, fulfilling the various types of responsibilities that express a state of unity with God. Okay, and through that unity with God, you reach a godlike state. And therefore, Nitzavim is such an important point, because this is the climax, an entire nation, which, God willing, will be something that will be shared by the entire world someday. Right? But we've moved from an individual could stand before God to a nation, and ultimately all of mankind, which will be the tikkun of the first man who was universal man, will one day stand before God and reach that, enjoy that sense of unity with Hashem. Okay. So now, we're standing, right? We're standing. And that standing is to be reinforced with a covenant, right? Now the question is, what is this covenant all about? What is a covenant? So, Rav Kook makes it very clear, something that is just such a fundamental thing to understand. The covenant between the Jewish people and God is not your ordinary agreement, where two people sign some kind of contract, and if one reneges, that's the end of the contract. When God enters into covenant, He, so to speak, creates covenant. Right? There's no such thing as understanding a God who chooses, and if you agree, then I'll agree. The will for covenant is covenant on the part of God. And therefore, for the Jewish people, we understand that covenant is intrinsic to the being of a Jew. Right? Covenant means that you have defined your existence, the inclusion of God. You would define yourself in relationship to God, and therefore God is part of your own human definition, although you are still human. That's a fact, right? And this is now establishing a fact, the intrinsic brit that the Jew has with God, no matter where you are, no matter who you are, no matter whether you have changed your name or had your nose fixed, whatever it might be, in order to try and escape Jewish identity, there is no way out of this deal. Right? A Jew is a Jew is a Jew. Not only for the Jews, but it says over here, I am making this covenant with you that are here, and you that are not even here. Verse 14. Ki et asher yishno po imanu. This covenant is with those who are with us, standing today, lifnei Hashem Elokeinu, ve'et asher einenu po imanu, and even with those who are not here. Meaning at this point, we have to appreciate that the covenant has been established, that sense of complete relationship with God has been established with every single Jew. Not only the Jews of that generation, all Jews forever. Right? All Jews forever. And not only Jews, but the Gemara brings down, this is even including converts. Right? Now how can this include converts? So the Gemara says that the converts were also, a person who converted was also at Sinai, right? That their mazal, so to speak, right, which is like the most, you know, the root of their being, was there, right? And therefore this covenant has been established. The question for a Jew is not whether you want to become a B'nai B'rith, so to speak, right? That's not the question, because we are already children of the covenant that has been established at Sinai, re-established prior to the entering into Israel. The question is, what will you use your free choice for? Will you use your free choice to express this truth, to reveal this truth, or will you choose not to reveal this truth? But it is a truth, a fact, that the Jews have come to a point, a nation has come to a point, where there's no turning back, no matter how rotten we may be, right? There's no turning back at this point of tikkun. There has been fixed on the human level a sense of relationship with God, okay? And there's no turning back for the Jews. Okay. Now, of course, the question is, well, then how is it possible that Jews who were not there are obligated by this covenant? So we just mentioned one answer, because we were all there. Right? In soul, we are all there, and therefore, one of the commentaries say, those who are standing here today in body, and those who are not with us, so to speak, in body, but are with us in soul. Okay? But on a more simple pshat level, then the understanding is, one of the commentaries expressed, there's a basic principle in Judaism that you can mizakila adam shelo b'fanav. You can do something meritous for a person, even without them knowing. In other words, if a person was offered a certain opportunity, right? My friend was offered a certain opportunity, I can acquire it for him because it's an opportunity for him, even though he doesn't know about it. I can do it for him. Okay? And therefore, being that we believe that Torah is an opportunity, although not every Jew in the world seems to think that, but we do, that Judaism is an incredible opportunity, and therefore these generations were able to acquire it and obligate us to it because it's only to our benefit. Right? And the last approach, I mean, there's a number of approaches, but the last approach I would like to offer is, the truth is, this is a covenant with the entire collective Israel. Right? The root. And therefore all the branches, by definition, already are encompassed within the root, and therefore obligated by the root. But this is the basic principle. The principle being that covenant is something you can't break. It's not a simple agreement. It's a reality of relationship that is being established. And the choice of the Jew is whether they want to be true to that potential, true to that essence, or not. And therefore, if a Jew opts no covenant, or so to speak, in their revealed life, then they're only being counterproductive. In other words, they're only hurting themselves. It's like if you were in your soul an artist, and you suppressed yourself from, or repressed being artistic, then you're only hurting yourself. Right? You're only hurting yourself. And yet, the ultimate is the possibility to express yourself. And therefore, people don't understand that a life of Jewish living, right, according to Halakha, is a mode of self-expression. What type of self? A self which is defined by Brit, defined by relationship with God. So, as we mentioned before, the Sfat Emma says that this is what Nitzavi means. You are standing, and that Brit is an unchangeable law for a Jew. Right? Unchangeable law. And your choice is whether you want to reveal that. And therefore, that then brings us into this whole paragraph of chapter 30, which then talks about tshuva and redemption, right? A long description of a process of tshuva and redemption. And the question is, Do we read these psukim as, and you shall return your heart, and you shall return to God, as a commandment? Or do we read it as a fact, a promise? The Ramban says it's both. Right? It's both a promise and a commandment. And that itself is true to the theme of Nitzavim. The fact that the Jews are now completely related to God, and that God has become part of their human definition. Well, so when a Jew behaves in a manner that contradicts that, they are contradicting their very essence. But ultimately, their essence will be manifest. That's just a fact. Right? Who you are is who you will be. Eventually, it might take a long time before you realize that and express that, but that's going to happen. And therefore, there is a promise that the Jewish people will do tshuva, and there is a promise that the Jewish people will be redeemed. And we have a commandment as individuals to effectualize that. Right? There is no guarantee that every single individual Jew will be redeemed. Right? There is a guarantee that the nation as a collective organic identity, right, will be redeemed and will do tshuva. Okay? That's for sure. So therefore, you could understand this kind of using quantum physics, because in quantum physics they found that Newtonian physics, go back to Newtonian physics, began the concept of the world as a great machine. That if we knew the facts of a cause, we could predict the effect. Okay? And therefore, based on Newtonian physics, if you knew the right momentum and the direction and, you know, the velocity, all the various facts of something in its initial push, right, we could decide where it's going to land. And therefore, it's all predicted. And based on this Newtonian law, that created a whole new philosophy, which went into seeing the whole world as a great machine and everything's predestined, and it all started with the first cause. And the first cause determines what will be in the end. What they then found through quantum physics is that's not true. Because the particularities of the process is a function of the people viewing it, which is, goes into the Heisenberg uncertainty principle. But I don't want to get into it. The point is that they found that in a quantum physics, in microscopic realms, it's impossible to predict what will be in a microscopic realm. The problem then became that Newtonian physics on a macroscopic scale still works, although quantum physics in a microscopic scale is unpredictable. So listen to this. From a macroscopic sense, the future is predictable. From a microscopic sense, which of course makes up the macro, it's unpredictable. It's a paradox, right, in science. And yet this is the paradox we're talking over here. On a macroscopic level, Klal Yisrael is going to do tshuva. Right? On a macroscopic level, Klal Yisrael, the whole people, right, as an identity, is going to return to the land, is going to merit the sight of Mashiach, and is going to usher in an age of new consciousness for the world. But that doesn't guarantee. Although, on a macroscopic, Klal Yisrael, the nation of Israel, will return to its land. On a macroscopic, the nation of Israel is going to do tshuva. But that does not guarantee that you're going to return, and that does not guarantee that you're going to do tshuva. Do you follow? Right? You, as an individual, have a choice whether you want to be part of the Israel show. Right? That's what you have the choice to be. Okay? Or to opt out of it. You as a Jew are bound by the covenant. You as a Jew will be punished if you are not true to it, and rewarded, of course, if you are true to it. But there is no guarantee for we as individuals. Right? There is a guarantee that the nation is going to definitely do tshuva, right, and is definitely going to return. Now let's look at this whole process as it's written here, because it seems to repeat itself a number of times, so it obviously must be referring to different things. So this is chapter 30. Vayaki yavoa lecha kol advari me'ela, habracha v'akla, and it will be when you will see before you the blessings and the curse that I've told you about. Shernatati lefenecha v'hashevata el levavcha. You'll return in your heart, b'chol goyim, amongst the goyim, where I have cast you out, where God, your God, has cast you out. V'shavta ad Hashem Elokech, and you will return up to God, your God, and you will listen to His voice, all that I've commanded you to do, and your sons in your hearts and in your soul. And God will return you and have compassionate and return and ingather you from the nations that He scattered you. And whether you're at the other side of the heavens, so to speak, He will get you and He will take you and bring you back to the land. Verse 6. And Hashem will circumcise your heart and the heart of your children to love God your God with all your heart and all your soul. And God will place these curses upon your enemies and those who hated you and hurt you. Right? And you will return and listen to the voice of God and do all His mitzvahs like I've commanded you today. And God will bless you in all your actions. And God will return to you and rejoice upon you, because you will listen to His voice to do His mitzvahs like it is written, and you shall return to God with all your heart and soul. Okay? Now, the question is, what is the relationship between tshuva and redemption? Okay? Is there a relationship between tshuva and redemption? Now, there are various opinions. Right? There are those opinions in terms of, do we have to do something for redemption? Or is the redemption going to happen anyways? Right? For Klal Yisrael. So on one hand, you have the extreme position of Satmir, that believe that redemption is going to happen anyways, and really your obligation, your responsibility is to sit and wait. Not only sit and wait, but for you to actively do something to bring about redemption, as you so perceive it, is considered a rebellion against God. This is Satmir's approach. Okay? A less extreme approach, but certainly is an approach, is the approach of Lubavitch. Right? From Lubavitch's point of view, one of the early Lubavitcher Rebbe said, just as we were exiled from the land not by choice, we will return to the land not by choice. Right? Which means, based on that, that Lubavitch believes that if you as an individual would like to go and move to Israel, that's nice. And kol hakavod. But there is no national responsibility, nor responsibility to encourage people to take in their hands that process of redemption. Follow? That's apparently Lubavitch's approach. There are other approaches, which of course Rav Kook's approach, and those who follow Rav Kook's approach, but not only Rav Kook, but many others, believe that no. That God will effectualize redemption through the people, and the people will be agents, and therefore we are intimately involved in the process of redemption. We don't just sit back, nor is it just something that an individual can go if you'd like to live in Israel, but national redemption is going to happen through God. But rather, the promises of God is always through us. Just as if God says, I will bless your fields and they will produce plenty. No one ever interpreted that to mean you just sit there and look at your field. Everyone understood that then you go and you plant your field, but you understand that you become a conduit for the blessing. And therefore, it's a little strange that someone would think, take those blessings in terms of fields, and everyone is clear that when it says Hashem will bless our field, no one ever interpret that to mean you sit back and look at your fields and pray. You get into your fields. And therefore, it's a little strange that the interpretation of redemption and all the various promises of redemption were all of a sudden interpreted to mean that you sit and wait, right? When that doesn't seem to be the general process of any other promises we found in the Torah.
Sit and wait, tshuva.
Oh, every individual always has to do tshuva, but that doesn't seem to be related to redemption so much, right? In terms of what you have to do for redemption, okay? Now, if we read this carefully, we will see that this kind of mixture between tshuva and redemption actually seems from the text the most realistic. That it's not like a separation, right? Some kind of separation. But they seem to be intertwined. There seems to be a process of the Jew makes a step forward, then God takes a step towards them, if we read it carefully, which is what we're going to do. And not only that, it's clear from reading the verses, which all the commentaries point out, that redemption is a process. It will not be boom. And the question is, what is the process? What we have here is the prophecy of what will happen in the redemptive days, in the times of Mashiach. And the Rambam says that a person who does not believe in the coming of Mashiach has actually contradicted what says in the Torah. You're not only denying the prophets, you're doing something more. You are denying the prophecy of Moses. Because in the prophecy of Moses, right here, the Rambam says, on these verses, is the promise and the prophecy of the redemption of the Jewish people. And if you do not await that, and you do not believe that, you're actually denying Torah's Moshe. I mean, it's bad enough to deny any prophet, right? But it's even much more serious if you deny the prophecy of Moses. Now let's look at it really carefully, because we're going to see something really, very beautiful. And it will be, we're at the top of chapter 30, so I'm just going to paraphrase. And it will be that all these things will happen to you, the blessings and the curse that I've placed upon you, and you will return to your heart amongst the goyim, right? Amongst the goyim where God has casted you out. Now that's interesting. What does that mean, you will return to your heart? Right? Now just keep that on hold. And you will return vashavta ad Hashem, which seems to be a second stage. Right? There's two things going on here. Returning to your heart, and then the next thing is returning ad Hashem. Interesting. What does it mean you return until God? You will listen to His voice, all that I have commanded you to do with all your heart and all your soul. Now, the Malbim points out that, first of all, the whole process of tshuva and redemption is of stages. Then the first stage will be a tshuva from fear, right? It won't be an inner tshuva. It'll be a tshuva that is a response to looking at what happened, the blessings and the curses, as it says here in verse 1. Okay? And you return to your heart, meaning your conscience starts to get to you. Maybe I'm doing something wrong. Here we are in the exile. Things are happening not so great to us. And then you will return until God. Now the Malbim explains that to me, that you will return until God, meaning not that you're going to do mitzvahs, right? But you will be prepared to entertain doing mitzvahs. There will be a revitalization of consciousness that there are mitzvahs. Not that I'm yet to do those mitzvahs. That there are mitzvahs, that there's something to Judaism, right? And you will return until God, in contrast to what will be the last verse of this process, that you will return to God, El Hashem, rather than Ad Hashem. What will then happen? There'll be this a beginning of consciousness, an awakening of Jewish identity, apparently some sensitivity towards mitzvahs, Torah, Judaism, which is very interesting. You should know that even the Reform movement today has a whole new return to mitzvahs called choosing to be commanded. Right? So that's their new shtick. Right? Because they say, what's Judaism without mitzvahs? What's Judaism without halacha? So someone gave me an article. It's called Choosing to be Commanded. Right? That is a beginning. Let's face it. That's a very, very serious beginning. That's really what we're witnessing in our generation. Okay? And there's obviously a renewal of interest in Judaism. Right? That, I mean, there is some form of Balchuva movement, whether it's in a practical sense or just in a spiritual sense. I mean, the conservative shuls and the reform shuls, their adult education programs are really succeeding. They're beginning to really get a lot more people in than they used to. Okay. Now it says in verse 3, now the Malbim says that being that you're outside of Eretz Israel, you couldn't do complete tshuva anyways. Right? And he says it in a very practical way, because all the various mitzvahs that are applicable to complete tshuva are missing because you can't do the mitzvahs connected to Eretz Yisrael. But I think in a more philosophical sense, let's face it, outside the land of Israel, it's hard to do complete tshuva. Right? It's hard. It's very, very hard. The consciousness is not there, and the truth is, as we mentioned before, the power of the mitzvahs are not the same outside of Eretz Yisrael. The Chafetz Chaim says that the power of the mitzvah in Israel is at least 20 times more powerful then that same mitzvah done outside of Eretz Israel. Right? And there are various opinions that hold that outside the land of Israel, mitzvahs are only to maintain your Jewish identity. But it's not as if you can grow, right, outside the land of Israel. Okay, and they're more like signs to get back. Okay, so there's something happening. Now what will then happen? God will respond to that renewal of tshuva, even though it's not completely practical tshuva. Even though it's a proof of tshuva perhaps coming from fear, right? Maybe it's motivated not from the right, from the inside, but motivated from external, seeing my family crisis and seeing what's breaking down. So I return to Judaism because I think it's the answer to my problems. No, okay, that's the beginning. But that beginning will then set off the divine response in verse 3, V'sham Hashem Elokecha et Shvutcha, and God will bring you back to Israel. The beginning of the ingathering of the Jewish people, according to these verses, is prior to complete tshuva of the Jewish people. Right? Prior to the complete tshuva of the Jewish people. And we must realize that this is happening right now. Right now, we have the merit to witness the ingathering of the Jewish people. Right? And one of the commentaries point out that it's actually going to happen that Jews will come back first from major countries, and that the goyim of those major countries will all of a sudden give permission to the Jews to go. Right? It's that heavy. And we don't even realize what we're part of right now. I'll find it later. It's mind-boggling. I mean, if we really understood it, we should break down and cry to realize that we are mummish part of the redemptive times. And that's why it's even more serious. Because the Jewish people are going to be redeemed no matter what. And therefore, if we're going to reach out to our friends, it's not because we think that the entire people are on our shoulder. Right? No. The entire people's not on our shoulder. The redemptive process is happening. Right? But our friends are on our shoulder. Because we're at a time that it's really happening very fast. The ball is rolling faster and faster in this redemptive time, and it's basically all aboard. You know, it's basically reaching out to people and jump on the bandwagon as it's moving because redemption is happening. And right now, the estimation is, although they're not publicly announcing this, but rumor has it that there's about 2,000 Russians coming in every week. Right now. Right? I mean, they're saying 1,000, but it seems really more like 2,000 are pouring in every week. You know, realize this is outrageous. What we're witnessing is the redemption. I mean, we're in it. What was prophesied then, and you have to understand this is unrealistic. What is being said over here is unrealistic for a nation to make it after everything they're going to go through. And they're going to go through it, and they make it. And they are making it, and we're part of it right this day. Today. Right? It's outrageous what we're seeing. And they didn't do complete tshuva yet. But there's something going on. There's an awakening. There's a readiness for emunah. There's a readiness for Judaism. There's a readiness for the values of the Jewish people. That is an amazing beginning. And in response to that amazing beginning that we've witnessed, there is this outrageous opportunity for Russia to all of a sudden say, okay, I mean, it wasn't all of a sudden. But to a certain extent, it doesn't make so much sense for them to change their mind like that. And yet, we don't want to say too much. We just say thank you and we continue on. But it's unbelievable. I mean, it could only be the hand of God that is influencing these Russian leaders to make these kinds of changes. Right? Okay. So then what will happen? We will witness the ingathering of the Jewish people, which is what we're witnessing right now. And then God will bring us to the land, and then God will circumcise our hearts. This will be an even greater step towards even more tshuva. From the uncircumcised heart, the opening of our hearts. And one of the commentaries point out that this is really relating to Mashiach times, where we will revert back to the quality of choice prior to the sin of the first man. Right? That we will begin to make right choices. I mean, we'll have choice. But we will naturally make the right choices. So God will uncircumcise our hearts. And then we move forward. Right? Verse 8. And you will return and listen to the voice of God, and you will do the mitzvahs. That's the next step. First, there has to be a reawakening of the emunah, the faith, the general acceptance and realization of commandments and their importance, whether it's inspired by external factors or not. But that will only lead to the ingathering of the people, the beginning of the process of Hashem circumcising our hearts, to open our hearts, and then not only will there be that general awakening, but there will be the beginning of practice. Right? And then we have to understand, you know, sometimes Jewish educators are only concerned with how many mitzvahs are they doing? Do they have kippahs on their heads? Are they putting on tefillin? Are they eating kosher? The first step is to revitalize the respect for Judaism, the sense of your heart being attracted to Judaism. And then and only then could we realistically expect the Jewish people to begin doing the mitzvahs, which is what it says over there. God will then respond to that in verse 9, and God will bring blessing to the actions of your hands, right? And then the land will begin to be blessed, and God will rejoice amongst you because you are listening to the word of Hashem, and you are returning to God. Not before, it was until God. It was more of a philosophical thing. It wasn't yet an encounter from the depth. Now it's mamish to God. Okay? Now the Meshech Chachma points out something very interesting. This blessing, and I will bless the works of your hands. The Meshech Chachma says, we learn from here that a Baal Tshuva must learn and work, not just learn. Right? There were two opinions in the Gemara, the opinion of Shimon Bar Yochai and the opinion of Rabbi Yishmael. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai said that a Jew should remove themselves from matters of the world and just learn. Right? Rabbi Yishmael said, no, you've got to learn and work and learn and work. Many tried to do it Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai's way, but they failed. And therefore, the practical advice is that a Jew works and learns. The Meshech Chachma says that a tzaddik gamur can opt for the way of Shimon Bar Yochai, to remove themselves from the worldly matters and just learn Torah. But a Baal Tshuva must take the road of Rabbi Shmuel. A Baal Tshuva should learn and work in line with what it says in Perkei Avot, that Torah im derech eretz, right, when a person learns and works, that helps you forget sin. Being your Baal Tshuva, and you have sin, you have to overcome it, you should learn and work. It's a fascinating idea, because there are many educators today for some reason think that, you know, all of a sudden this Baal Tshuva could just become in Kolel, and all of a sudden, you know, which is something that's for a unique few. But I think in general, Baal Tshuva should be introduced to Judaism, a Judaism that encourages them to learn enough so that they can then go back to their life of learning and working. Okay. But he's the Meshech Chachma. And he's Medayik, he brings this out because it says, and God will bless the works of your hands. Right? Meaning that you'll be working. Right? Didn't say, well, bless your fields. And specifically the works of your hands. And then it says, bless your fields. You know, and your cattle and your fields and the fruit of your... But it's the work. Right? So the Baal Tshuva will have to work. And that's very important to understand that that's the process of our redemption. That we'll be brought back to the land. And there will be a new tshuva movement, but those Baal tshuvas must realize that that does not divorce them from the responsibilities to work the land, right? And incorporate that as part of their as the tshuva process. Okay, then Moshe Rabbeinu continues on and says in verse 11, "Ki a mitzvah zot, this mitzvah that I've commanded you to is not far from you. It's actually very close." Various opinions deal with whether this is referring to all the mitzvahs, or whether it's referring to the particular mitzvah that we just dealt with, which is the mitzvah to do tshuva. Okay, and they're both, of course, acceptable, different opinions. The point being, whether you say it's tshuva, or whether you'd say it's all the mitzvahs, it's bound up with atem mitzavim. That the essence of the Jew has been established. Right? And being that this is who you are, this is not far from you. This is you. Right? To do tshuva is the most natural thing for the Jew to do. Right? What's unnatural for the Jew is to run away from Judaism. That's really unnatural. And when the Jew would get in touch with themselves, it would be the most natural thing. It's the clarity of coming home. It's that the joy of being who I felt I always was supposed to be. And therefore, this is not a difficult thing. Right? What's difficult is realization. You know, it's like if you would walk into a party wearing this really, you know, ridiculous shawl that just is completely out of any harmony with whatever else you're wearing. Right? So I mean, how long would it take you to realize that this doesn't fit? You take it off. Right? But it's just the time it takes to realize it doesn't fit. Once you realize it doesn't fit, you take it off in a second. Right? You take it off in a second. I remember when I was a wee lad, I was about 11 years old, and I was in a shul play. I had the leading role. Now, even though I had the leading role, the shul play was Little Abner. And I didn't get Little Abner because, of course, Little Abner is this real tall guy. But he didn't really have all the lines, and he really didn't have all the songs. The guy who had all the songs and lines was Marrying Sam. I got Marrying Sam. Now, in true life, there was Little Abner, there was the girl, I forgot her name, who was Little Abner's, but, you know, trivia.
Daisy,
probably, sounds like it. Daisy. So Little Abner is Daisy. I don't remember the story. And Daisy May, whatever. And I'm marrying Sam, and I'm supposed to end up marrying Daisy and Little Abner. Now, in true life, behind the scenes, I was personally in love with the girl playing Daisy May. I was really in love with her. And it killed me that he was Little Abner, and I was marrying Sam. Drove me nuts, right? Drove me nuts. But I, you know, and when you're 11, you know. Right? I was sure she's my soulmate. It was clear. I knew I would marry her. I just knew that this was meant to be. And it was driving me nuts that God didn't understand that and didn't make me taller so I could be Little Abner. Well, it doesn't really matter because I didn't care. Anyway, so I was really madly in love with her. And anyways, we did the play. It was hard on me, but we did the play anyways. And after the play, my father took pictures of hundreds of people there. And after the play, I was looking, you know, got the pictures back, and I was looking at the pictures of the cast. And anyways, there was this scene where I was doing a song with Daisy May. I think it's I'm Past My Prime. This is important. I want you all to know this. Anyway, so as I was looking through these pictures, I saw this funny picture of this little guy standing beside this very tall girl. I said, wow, what a funny picture. I said, wait a second. That funny picture's me. And at that moment, I finally realized that she was about 2 feet taller than me. You see, I never had a problem with that because I was always used to looking in that direction, so I always thought we looked eye to eye. Right? I never really knew that. But at that moment, I had such a deep crush, but when I saw that picture, in a second, I was no longer interested in Daisy May. Because it was that realization that she couldn't be my soulmate. I mean, she's much too tall for me. I look ridiculous. This is a ridiculous picture. I was so embarrassed I wanted to throw away the picture. I mean, but someone could explain it to me. Don't you realize she's taller than you? What are you talking about? We're the same size. You never realize it. It's the realization that takes so much time. And that's what makes it difficult. What makes it difficult for Jews is to realize they're Jews. Once they realize they're Jews, it'll be like that. Shabbos will be so obvious, right? It's just that. So therefore, this mitzvah isn't hard, right? But what's hard is to get all the garbage out of clarity of mind, to get in touch with it. And therefore, it's not far, it's right there. Verse 14, Ki karav alecha davar. This is really very close to you. It's the closest thing. You don't have to run anywhere to find your identity as a Jew, to find God, to find Torah. It's right there. Right? It's right there. It's very true. It's very true that it's so close to us. Right? It's so close to us. Ki karav alecha davar ma'od b'ficha o b'levavcha. It's in your mouth already and it's in your heart. Lasota, just to do it. All you have to do is do it. Right? And you'll feel and you'll realize that it was right there the whole time. Okay, so what then happens is Moshe in Ve'elach then tells the Jewish people that he's passing. The question is, where is Moshe going? They were just standing, he'd assembled everybody, and now it says, and Moshe went. Where'd he go? So the commentaries say that Moses, after he established or reestablished this covenant with them, he told them to go home because he didn't want to, in the same assembly, announce his death. Because he wanted the Brit to be completely accepted in joy. They accepted it, they went home, and then he went to their tents and told them, I'm on my way out. From a Hasidic point of view, various Hasidic commentaries say that Ve'elech means that Moses went into each Jew, right? And that there's a spark of Moses in every Jew, okay, from a mystical point of view. But it's here that Moses establishes the authenticity of tradition of Judaism by having this Hakel ceremony that's going to happen once every 7 years, by a Jew writing a Sefer Torah, and his words of encouragement that he will establish Yeshua and that God will go with Yeshua. Okay, and that's basically coming in the ending. Okay, so the rest we'll do tomorrow. Actually, we'll do Azinu tomorrow, and God willing, next week we'll finish the Chumash.
This presentation by Rabbi David Aaron has been brought to you by Israelite, inspiring a renaissance in Jewish living. To access additional presentations from our online media library, order our best-selling books, or learn more about Israelite programming, including seminars, web-based learning, teleconferences, spiritual retreats, Shabbaton experiences, Israel missions, and leadership training, please visit us at www.israelite.org. That's www.israelight.org. You can also call us in New York at 212-947-4990, or in Jerusalem at country code 972-2-627-4890. We hope you enjoyed this presentation, and we look forward to learning with you at Israelite.